everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI. 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a positively minded life. Here on WBAI. Hey, imagine you got up one morning and everything was different. Suppose that your life partner asked you why you were wearing a blue shirt when you knew you were wearing a white shirt, and seemed puzzled when you insisted that you saw it as white. Suppose you got to work and your telephone extension had been changed from 4432 to 4435, but everyone insisted it had always been 4435. Imagine what you would begin to think if you pointed out a new piece of furniture in your favorite restaurant, only to be told by your lunch partner that it's always been just there. Imagine that you begin to notice that you experience a different reality slightly, but significantly different from the reality that other people experience. That's the way we're going to be talking about today. Today, I'm going to be talking about a phenomenon that is very popular. It happens all over the world. It's happening now with the Olympics. It happens in politics, and it happens in personal life. Today, I'm going to be talking about gaslighting. Gaslighting, such an interesting word to call it, gaslighting. Where do you imagine the word gaslighting comes from? Well, it comes from an old movie, 1944. Charles Boyer, Ingrid Bergman, I'll let you hear some of the dramatics of it. It was a movie about a man, Charles Boyer, who was slowly driving his wife crazy, making her think she was insane by altering her reality. And she was so much in love with him that he kept changing things a little at a time and helping her question her mind. Here, let me give you a small example of it. This will bring back some memories to some of you.
Automatically being driven out of your mind.
But why? Why?
Joseph Cotten.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And you thought I was being cruel to you. Keeping people away
not
from
cruel.
You. Making you a prisoner.
Oh, you're the kindest man in the world. I'm sorry,
I'm sorry. The more educated...
I'm sorry.
So, that became part of the theme.
If I were not mad, I could have helped you.
And then, it goes on a little further.
Noticing, Paulette, you've been forgetful lately.
Forgetful?
Well, losing things and... Now, don't look so worried, Paulette. It's nothing. You get tired.
Yes, that's probably what it is. I get tired. I'm tired now. Can't we go home?
Oh, no, we still have the Crown Jewels to see. They're in that building over there.
How do you know?
What did you say?
I said, how do you know where they are? You haven't been here before.
The guide told us inside. Are you becoming suspicious as well as absent-minded, Paula?
No, of course not, Gregory.
Well... So anyway, let's go on to talk about this. It happens to us right from childhood. You know, imagine what you would begin to feel like. What if all oddities began happening day in and day out? The world that other people perceived, understood, and remembered was different from the world you understood. So one of two things are going crazy. Either you're going crazy or people are crazy-making. And that happens. Imagine if the condition persists, not just for days, but for weeks, months, and even years. You think this doesn't happen very much, but it happens every day. You see, for example, let's say a man is a compulsive gambler, and he's sworn off gambling, and yet he's losing money, and yet the bills are mounting up. And his wife sees the bills, and she sees that the money has disappeared somewhere. And he says, well, no, I had to lend money to Uncle Tony because he was sick. and she perceives that something is wrong, but he keeps assuring her nothing is wrong, like Charles Boyer did with Ingrid Bergman. It's crazy-making. That's called gaslighting. Even though, as any addict would be, he is just trying to keep his addiction alive. But addiction tends to make the other mate not know what reality is. What do you think would begin to happen inside you? You might get angry with everyone in the world because they saw the world differently from you. And you might continue to insist that you are right. So many of you out there see the insanity of the world, but they see nobody else is upset but you. And so you say, wait a minute, why aren't you upset? Do you see what's going on here? And they say, no, it's not going on. Well, the denial is kind of interesting. I saw an interview with George Bush yesterday at the Olympic Stadium, where they asked him, the troubles in America. And he said, we have no troubles in America, right? Beautiful, beautiful, perfect. What are we, crazy? Because I thought we had some troubles here. So very often, people will try to, governments will try to, corporations will try to gaslight you. Now, the trouble with this perception that you would be gaslighted is, if you believe it to be true, then you can become worried about what they're doing to you. And if you become worried about it and you get punchy enough, you become paranoid. And then you go from being gaslighted, which is being made to believe that you're crazy, and you become so punchy that you become crazy. So becoming crazy is a product of being made crazy very often. I hope this isn't going to trigger yours. All right, I mean, you ask yourself, like in the earlier example, how likely is it that I alone would think that my shirt is white, that my phone number is 4432, that the furniture is brand new? If everyone thinks the world is different from the way I think the world is, there must be something wrong with me. Many depressed people feel that way. Christmas time comes. Holidays come. Hallmark cards come. And they tell you how wonderful everything is and how wonderfully people love each other, right? And the movie tell you how great romance is. And you look at it and you say, no, this isn't me. Well, they also want you to believe that there is an ideal, there is a perfect. And you're crazy for not perceiving it or wanting to buy the product that will help you get it. If you have a shred of rationality, you should begin to think that it was you. Your anger and your frustration will begin to shift. And then your anger and frustration over perceiving the world different than everybody else does would turn into fear, depression, confusion, and self-doubt. And if you have a shred of rationality, you'd wonder if you would be going crazy. See, watch a baby test and learn about her reality detection devices. A baby reaches out her hands, picks up a pretty bauble, raises it above her head, and lets it fall down to the surface. She giggles with glee. Babies love to drop things. She's delighted by her reliable and consistent understanding of the way gravity works in the universe. She couldn't tell you that, but inside she knows that she is learning, She's learning that reality is consistent and that her senses are reliable devices for detecting reality. Her self-esteem is building. She is thinking in baby think. I can, I can, I can. Now, surprise changes in reality are amusing in small, brief doses. So let's say the baby has a balloon, and the balloon goes up, and the baby is fascinated by balloon. But soon enough, the belief about reality and about gravity shifts. Some things go down, and other things, especially these rubber things that are light as a feather, they go up. But if instead you gave her a balloon that just fell to the ground or a dark, heavy ball that floated in the sky, the baby would get very confused. When we're children, our parents frequently have an investment in making us feel crazy. Yeah, I know, it's hard to believe, don't you think? I mean, you have parents who love you, they love you, but you look at your mother and you look at your father and they're not happy with each other. And you try to expose the truth. And you try to expose it, and they tell you, no, you're wrong for what you perceive. It's not true. Daddy and I love each other very much. Oh, that knife in his back. No, that was just an accident. I fell down. No, he and I are terrific with each other. No, everything is good. And then you listen, and you hear them arguing, and you hear them doing bitter things, and you hear your mother cheating on him in some way, hiding money, telling you things. Don't tell your father. It's crazy-making. I remember a patient who came to me who had a symptom. The symptom was he had what's the equivalent of snow falling in front of his eyes. He had little white dots in front of his eyes all the time. He would look. And they checked him, and the doctors checked him, and everything. They found nothing wrong with his eyes. But all he could do was keep seeing these little white dots ever since he was a little boy, little white dots falling in front of his eyes. We did an age-regressive psychotherapy, dramatic. And when we went back in time, he remembered a time when he was a little boy, and he was in a skiing lodge with his mother. Now, his mom and dad had just divorced. Dad disappeared suddenly, so in a little boy's life, that's quite a shock. Daddy's not here. Now, there's Mommy, the only one you could depend on. Mommy is trying to flirt with the ski instructor. So she's having a good time. That looks a little odd to you, the little boy, but it's okay. I still have my mommy. I lost my daddy, but I have my mommy. And then you say to Mommy, Mommy, you look outside and the kids are playing. You say, can I go outside and play? And Mommy, who does not want to leave her flirtation with the ski instructor, says, you don't want to go out there. It's snowing. Now, this is not true. The kid is in what's now called a double bind. A double bind has certain rules to it. A double bind is there is a falseness that is being stated. The falseness cannot be exposed. That's the double bind. You're not allowed to expose the falseness because you lose too much. So the double bind is the child looks outside and it's not snowing and his mother says it is snowing. But he can't afford to doubt his mother. He can't afford to believe his mother was lying. If she was lying about the snow outside, then maybe what happened to Daddy? What really happened? And does she really love me? All of this comes in with one little statement. It's snowing outside. So what did this boy do? He saw snow. He actually invented snow falling in front of his eyes, and he kept it as a symptom till his late adolescence when I got my hands on him. And by going back into that experience as a child where he remembered that instead of going crazy and seeing snow falling in front of eyes, he, during the therapy session, imagined his mother there and said, it's not true. It's not snowing. You just want to stay in here, and you don't want me to go outside. Which the minute he did that during a therapy session, the snow disappeared. That's the power of this stuff. The power of crazy making, the power of hypnosis, the power of you as a child being there and having someone tell you over and over again that your perception of reality is not right. Like I said, surprise changes in reality, they're amusing, you know, in small ways. Like, we like jokes. We like comedians. Someone recently told me the secret of comedians, that comedians are very lonely. And why are they lonely? They're lonely because in order to be a comedian, you have to be on the outside looking in. You have to see things that people don't see. You have to make humor out of parts that people normally don't take apart. So as a comedian, you're always on the outside looking in. Kind of fascinating, don't you think? But we like it because comedians present us with something in reality that we're not familiar with. When reality defies our perception, we get a rush from the novelty and then quickly restore ourselves to reality. Cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance, a fascinating idea. Cognitive dissonance is when something doesn't match in your mind, when something doesn't make sense. If you look at a magician and he's in a cage and then he waves a wand and there's a tiger in the cage, your mind says that's impossible. And that's cognitive dissonance, where your mind cannot accept what is. What happens in its place, of course, is then you figure out there must be a trap door, it must have been done this way, and you go back to the way you were. Cognitive dissonance, a shocking moment, a moment of shock. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're looking at gaslighting. We're looking at crazy making and what makes people crazy and how some people intentionally do it. And when I say to you, some people intentionally do it, your parents don't want you to do it. They don't want you to be crazy. But at one point, if your mother and father are having a fight, or if your father leaves your mother and your mother is holding you as a baby in her arms, and she's cradling you and rocking you, you understand if you're a year old, if you're suckling at her breast and you're in kind of la-la land, anything she says to you, if you could understand it, is going to drive itself really home. So if she says the words to you, "Oh, my baby, you're my baby, you're the only one I'll ever love, you're the only one for me, nobody will ever love you the way I love you," even if you don't understand the words, the lyric gets recorded in your brain. And later on, when you begin to understand words, it somehow unconsciously penetrates through your brain. And then you wonder why, as you become an adult, you can't find a relationship with anybody who can love you properly, except your mother. It's crazy making. Do you see what I see? Is it me? You know, that's what people do. You know, when you have something that you can't believe, we check our reality with other people all the time. It's part of how we keep our reality detection device properly tuned. So did you ever see like a shooting star? And right away you turn around to somebody, "Did you see that?" And they say, "No." And then you say, "Oh, it was a shooting star." But on some level, you're saying to yourself, "I'm not sure I saw it. Maybe it was a shooting star." Did you see what I see? Is a common thing. Is it me, or is it that lady's hair is on fire? Is it my imagination? Our self-esteem begins to suffer, and our trust in ourselves begins to erode if our reality detection devices begin to become unreliable. So if, like Charles Boyer with Ingrid Bergman, he says to her, "Oh no, I love you, it's just your imagination. Oh no, it's not me, it's, oh no, it's all in your mind." Slowly, slowly, slowly it erodes. In the end, we begin to think we are crazy. This is an essential component of bona fide brainwashing. Now, if you have complete control over another person and you make reality unpredictable, they have to rely on you for reality. So in brainwashing, for example, in a prison, they keep the lights on all the time. They control timing. Is today today or is today tomorrow? And it's up to them to let you know. When you begin to depend on somebody else for reality, that's the beginning of brainwashing. The organizing fabric of reality is derived from sensory perception and from the sensory, from what you feel. You feel tells you what's real. But it begins to deteriorate if your feelings are invalidated by the people around you. This is a technique for making people crazy. This sort of reality distortion is that principal plot in that movie, Gaslight. So, addiction, and which brings me to this, this all comes from addiction, is usually kept secret. When somebody is an addict, they usually keep it secret. Let's say it's internet porn, basement sex, addiction, right? Or maybe it's smoking cigarettes. Some people are addicts. And, you know, I know husbands and wives who don't know each other smoke. You know, the guy sprays his mouth all the time. He doesn't want his wife to know he smoked a cigarette. Gamblers. Spenders. I know people who spend money. They go shopping on the internet, but they don't tell their husbands. Because I could cover it, and they cover it with their own money, but they don't want to tell their husband. Because he would criticize them. But it's like a compulsion. It's secret romances that you have with other people, you know, silent conversations, flirtations, actual affairs. All of those things are based on secrecy. And when it's based on secrecy, what you have to do is when you are seen by the other partner as having had this secret, you have to deny their reality. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm sure you've been in the middle of this in one way or another. You could have been a crazy maker, right? I mean, what does it do to kids to say they're Santa Claus? I often wonder about this. Santa Claus left the presents. Well, who wants to take Santa Claus away from kids? But, and harsh reality certainly is a little too harsh for kids, but Santa Claus. When addicts get into recovery, they're often surprised by the intensity of their partner's reactions. When their partners get angry, in fact, there's a beautiful scene in Gaslight. I wonder if I have it here. I'm going to try this one more time because there was a scene where she says to him, she's crazy. She says, yes, I'm crazy, but she has the reaction that's so common for people who are on the other side of an addict or the other side of crazy making. Let me see.
Oh, you're the kindest man in the world.
Now, this is the first one where she believes he's kind and wonderful. I'll give it to you in just a minute.
If I were not mad, I could have helped you. Whatever you had done, I could have pitied and protected you. Because I am mad, I hate you. Because I'm mad, I have betrayed you. And because I am mad, I'm rejoicing in my heart without a shred of pity, without a shred of regret, watching you go with glory in my heart.
I don't know. I guess it's pretty hard to get it by not being there. But that's Ingrid Bergman saying, you know, now I'm mad. And now I'm mad. And this is what happens in addiction. When they get into recovery and the mates suddenly start opening up their feelings, the intensity of the feelings are so huge. Huge. Because their reality was distorted. There is relief for partners when they know the truth. They begin to know that they are not crazy and so begin to restore their own relationship with reality. Keep in mind, there are many partners who choose addicts because they want their reality distorted. There are a lot of people who find reality so uncomfortable that they choose deceptive partners so that their deceptive partners can help them change their reality. So it's not all one way. So my question becomes the following. My question becomes, how many things do we do where we deny the reality of another person? And it's every day. Every day. How are you doing today? I'm fine. It's the beginning of it. I'm fine. I'm fine means don't look at me. I'm upset. I feel terrible. Hey, you look a little tired. No, I'm not tired. I'm just, you know, haven't had my coffee. Crazy making. Why do we do that to each other? What do you think the big consequence is? What is it? Is it our image? What are we afraid of doing? How do we contribute to this? You talk to the government and the government talks about war and they say, oh, we won't let you see any bodies being brought back from Iraq. It's crazy making. Oh, no, we only need a few more dollars to get it over there. You know what I mean? Oh, no, there's hidden weapons that are crazy making, crazy making, crazy making. By people being having the power to crazy make you, they have the power to control everything around us. What am I saying to you? Do I want you to be paranoid? No, you got to be careful because you get too crazy. You get too paranoid. You get too worried. And then you're now off the other end. Now you want to make everybody else crazy. There is a balance. They say you can trust your heart. I'm not sure about if you know what your heart is, because your heart sometimes means your reaction. And you can't always trust your reactions. You know, if you're somebody who tends to be hysterical and you have reactions and you get angry, you can't say, I trust my heart, I'm angry. No. How do you know what you feel? Well, it's training. It's trying to learn what you feel, trying to become tuned in to your sensory system. It is your sensory awareness. It's awareness of your own senses and your own reality that defend you against being made crazy or crazy making yourself. But it takes time. Reality is nowhere near as much fun as fantasy. Fantasy is such a wonderful game you could play, you know? You could make any color you want. You could dance whatever way you want to dance. That's fantasy. Reality, though, whew. Reality is very tough. So, my friends, I suggest that we look at this issue of crazy making and we look at where we have a part in it. Now, we have a part in crazy making every partner we have. Every partner, and I'm talking about social dating. You contribute to the insanity of the world when you put on a plastic face. Okay, you say to yourself, well, I have to look this way because they won't like me if I don't look this way. I have to behave this way because they won't like me if I don't behave this way. I want them to not think. Now, this becomes a key. In sitting with a group of men, I was asking a group of men, why do you treat your wives this way? And they said, well, I don't want her to think that that I don't love her. I don't want her to think that that I'm not faithful. Very often, we try to control what the other person thinks. Very often, the way we behave with each other is so that they won't think something. So if you go into work and people see you tired and haggard and you had a fight with your mate the night before and you look terrible, right? And they say, hey, what's wrong? You say, nothing. I don't want you to think that there is something wrong. So part of crazy making is controlling the way the other person thinks as if we have a right to do it or we could even do it. And if we're going to be part of the same team, what we want to do is conspire to start eliminating as much of the cover-ups as possible. Harsh reality, I don't like harsh reality too much, but reality, it's not such a bad thing. Somebody asked me just today about drugs. When I was a kid, I grew up in the 60s, there were lots of drugs everywhere. Drugs, chemicals, alcohol, everything, you know? And he said, what do you like nowadays, he asked me. And I said, I don't like anything. I said, there is nothing. I even don't like alcohol. At most, I like alcohol for the taste of it, for the sip of a wine, but I don't like any of it. And he said, why not? I said, because I don't like my reality altered. I don't want to be in control of my reality. I don't want it to stay rigid. But if I've got the time to lay back and take it easy and sit in the sun among some trees, I don't want to take some magic mushrooms to exaggerate it. Just sitting under those trees is good enough for me. I don't want to enhance my experience because my experience is automatically pretty great if I take the time to have it. Reality is my vacation, you know? It's what I strive to the most. For most people, fantasy is the vacation. Go someplace that's other than what is real. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So I want to take your calls related to gaslighting. And I know we're going to hear a lot of persecutory stuff. People are going to say what's happened to them. I understand that. Our telephone numbers will be after the break at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We'll be taking your calls. But we're going to take a short interlude. And you think about this. Crazy making, gaslighting, I mean, you know, Charles Boyer-ing, things like that.
Well, you've been forgetful lately.
Forgetful?
Well, losing things and... Now, don't look so worried, Paula, it's nothing. You get tired. And...
Yes, that's probably what it is, I get tired. I'm tired now, can't we go home?
Oh, no, we still have the Crown Jewels to see. They're in that building over there.
How do you know?
What did you say?
I said, how do you know where they are? You haven't been here before.
The guide told us inside.
Crazy making. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I will be back with you in a couple of minutes, my friends. Be back with you soon.
WBAI, New York, New York, New York, New York,
We're the New Orleans Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations.
Stand by.
That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
it ain't necessarily so. An old one, Art Farmer and Benny Golson, in case you were curious, Art Farmer. That's a really sweet thing that just crept up on us. I'll leave that on for a little bit. That's just so sweet. It ain't necessarily so is part of a theme. But you know, another theme is how gentle I'm asking you to be with your own heart. Because for certain people, I mean, just get this in mind, not only do other people make us crazy, but we make ourselves crazy by denying our own emotions. I met a man the other day, he could feel many things, he could feel anger, he could feel love, but he couldn't feel anything in between. So I wonder, you know, what is it that we do to ourselves? Why do we, not only do they crazy make our feelings so that we can't feel what we feel, but we do it to ourselves. Afraid to feel scared, afraid to feel mad, afraid to feel sad, you know? So we do it to ourselves as well. But the focus of the show is on what we do with each other. And that's what I really want to look at today. I want to kind of make it a little better. I was looking at opening ceremony of the Olympics, and I mentioned this yesterday, and I was just saying, that's crazy making. All of that peace and love, and all I want is love and union, and, you know, and we're going to put up pictures of children's faces. And I said, wait a minute. Wait, please, I'm not this crazy. I'm not this crazy to think that 2008 people could represent a block of wood and to think that they're all happy just floating through space. It's crazy making. Me and music, huh? So we're going to take your calls. 212, my friends. 212-209. That's Nights in the Garden of Spain, by the way. By Falla. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Blessings of peace, love, faith. This is Rashida calling
Rashida.
From the
BS. Hello,
haven't
Rashida.
Talked to you in a minute. How you doing?
Good. And how are you?
I am fabulous and grateful for the miracle. I have a story that stayed in my brain. I'm 59 years old. This must have happened when I was 11 or 12. You know, I grew up in, well, you don't know, but I grew up in Harlem.
I do know.
Of course you do, but you know stuff. You be knowing stuff. You made me laugh just now. You said, I'm not that crazy. But what about Falun Gong? You know, I haven't even been able to really watch. I'm not a real TV watcher, but the Olympics, I have to kind of detach from that. But yesterday, that compassion was giving me the balance to, you know, it's everything is in agreement on a spiritual level. It is in an agreement, but that's another show. So what happened, our teachers at that time were very, like, I lived in 143rd Street. My second and fifth grade teacher, Miss Johnson, she lived around 144th Street. So we would, you know, go to their houses, our teachers. They interacted because they lived in the same community and everything. And she became like my godmother. As a matter of fact, she bought my dress when I graduated from sixth grade. She moved up to the Bronx, like, what was the show, Moving On Up? Oh, what's his name?
Hey, Rashida. Not as much of the external details.
Okay.
I would love
so what
to
happened,
get to
I was
story.
At her house, she and her husband, one night we were in like a little foyer area, and he broke a vase. The vase fell off. So the next day, she says, who broke my vase? She was really, this must have been something, you know, family heirloom, whatever. And I'm sitting there looking at him, expecting him to say, oh, honey, I broke it. It was accidental. No one's in there but him, he and I. Don't you know that man never said anything? And she was blaming us, her children and myself. I would go up there for summer vacations. She was like, when are you broken? You're going to tell me. Everybody's going to be on punishment. So I'm looking for Mr. Johnson to say, honey, I broke the vase. You know, it wasn't a big thing. He never said anything. I thought I was in total shock when I realized that he wasn't going to say anything. And she was very angry with us, the children, and she punished us and everything. He never, ever said anything. I know I'm not crazy. I saw him break the vase and pick up the pieces.
Yeah.
So that's the short of it.
Rashida, thank you very much. It's
okay.
Going to lead me to something. Thank
it
you.
It stayed with me all of these
I
years.
I hear what a big thing that is.
And both of them are on the other side of the rainbow at this point. So it was just as amazing. I couldn't believe that he just would stand there and not open his mouth. I said, did he know?
And let a child get punished.
Right. And then I said, maybe he didn't break it. You know?
Well, that becomes a big one. Let me tell a story about this. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, all right. Talk to you later.
The Blue Vase. I'm going to tell a story about the Blue Vase. There was during a period of my life as a psychotherapist, I was doing work with multiple personality disorder very specifically. And multiple personality disorder is very unique work because it means when one person comes and sits in the room, they can easily become another person, and they do. It's another person. They're not like one person acting another way. The person who sits opposite you 10 minutes after the first person sits opposite you is different than the first person. It's a different person. One was a little boy I used to talk to. His name was Bobby. Another one was Sarah. Another one was a man who would visit, all in the same personality. Every session was like group therapy. But they didn't talk to each other. Actually, they did talk to each other, except the main character did not talk to the disconnected characters. The main character was left out of the loop. So the main character, you got the idea, she would drive herself into walls with a car, and she would think she was driving, but really it was her alter self driving her. So what's the only way to get through life if something is commanding? Every color you wear, everything you believe in gets changed automatically. The only way to go is to get depressed, which she was when they brought her to me. They thought she was depressed and suicidal. She wasn't suicidal. Just one of her characters inside her wanted to kill her. Now, that doesn't make sense, does it? Because if one of the characters inside her wanted to kill her, then the character would die. But the character didn't believe that. The character believed that if I kill her, the main host, then I will live. All right, the story's getting funny, right? So here I am, a budding psychotherapist, and she tells me a story about the Blue Vase. She said she remembers the day she was sitting somewhere, and she was watching her mother's favorite Blue Vase on the fireplace. And the next thing she knows, she's angry at her mother, and she's focusing on it, and she says she broke the vase by thinking about it. And I said, wait a minute, Joanne. Oh, hold on. That's not a real name, but I'm going to use that name. I said, you can't break a vase by thinking about it. She said, yes, I could. I said, well, break the vase over here. She says, I can't use that power. I said, why can't you use that power? She said, because I may break something else and not mean to. So I said, see, you believe you could break vases by your concentration, and you have to live in such a cautious way that you can't focus your mind with that kind of aggression because you're afraid you'll destroy something else. She said, yes. I said, I want you to break that vase. And she said, I will not do it. So we went into a hypnosis. And in this hypnosis, this other angry character appeared and told me the story. What happened was Joanne, when she got angry, didn't permit herself to get angry. So she dissociated. She disconnected from herself. And this other character came out of her, this angry one, and went over and broke the vase. And then went back into her body. And she woke up and she saw the vase was broken, thinking she had done it. You know, Rashida, I mean, it's you're on the edge there. You're on the edge thinking that you might have done it because of this thing. No wonder you don't forget it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. You know, if you do what I do for a living, which is basically the field of psychology, you understand that it's all about distortions. Distortions of feelings, distortion of reality, distortions of thinking. 209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. I'm sorry, I snuck that up on Michael. 212-7...
Are you there?
Yes, here I am. There.
Okay. Did you hear me say the story was fascinating?
No. Could you start with that over again? I'm sorry, I missed it.
That's all. This story you just told was very fascinating.
Yeah.
Just want to ask a question, which might be silly. Should I say to people, tell people how I really feel when they ask me socially, how are you? Which I, you know, always feel crummy saying good when I'm not.
What's your name?
Anne. Yes.
Anne, you know, I know what you're saying. Here's the question. Nobody wants somebody who's a wet mop around,
Yeah.
But the question really becomes, to the people who are close to you, do you let them know how you feel?
Oh, all right. Now I have it clear.
Because I think if you're really, you know, socially, there are many of us who could afford to be more honest. You know what I mean? If somebody says to you, how do you like the music? You know, and you don't like the music, you say it's fine or something. But, I mean, you could sometimes
okay,
speak
Okay, I'm sorry to be so dense, but now
no,
I...
No, wait a minute. You weren't dense.
Okay.
I didn't make that clear. I'm sounding like I'm an advocate for total truth everywhere. And I'm not. Mm-hmm. But I care about the people who love you. Now, tell me about someone who loves you who you don't tell the truth to.
My daughter, she wants me to lie. She wants me to put on a false front. I said, do you want me to be a Stepford mother? A Stepford, well, I'm grandmother, but mostly mother. She said yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's her reality. Why does she say that? Does she feel the burden of you?
I guess so.
So I think we could carry that conversation a bit more with your daughter. And you say to your daughter something that I remember, this very, very precious gift a mother once gave to her child. There was a woman I knew who was an elderly woman, and not elderly, she was a sickly woman, and she had three kids. And when she died, she left a message for her children, right? And the message was on a tape. She left a tape recording for them. And it said, kids, I want you to know that all my life I've been depressed long before you even came on this planet. And I was depressed since I was a little girl and my father died. And some part of me has always been waiting to join my father in death itself. So as I was bringing you all up, I was always fighting against this tide of this own depression, death of my own. So please don't blame yourself. There was nothing you could do to make me feel better. There was nothing that made you responsible for the way I felt. I felt that way long before you came here. And I hope by now, in my death, I don't feel that way anymore. What a gift. What a gift for a mother to give her children. So the real question is, if they feel responsible, maybe.
That didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
That she feels responsible. It occurred to me that she feels ashamed of me and embarrassed.
Yeah. Yeah. But so ask if you could
I
have
thought
a...
I told her so many times how sorry I was about her childhood, about my mothering.
Well, that's besides the point, you see.
It is.
That's one part. Here you are holding yourself at fault. Sometimes to a child, it's worse to hear your parent apologizing than for them to just be themselves. You know, it gets sickening when your parents start apologizing for the way they brought you up. After a while, it just makes you angrier and angrier. Yeah. One apology is good. Constant apologies become nauseating.
From every fight, every time she lost it and got mad at me and would throw that up to me.
Yeah, okay.
So when she was overreacting, in other words, and I just did that.
It seems that somewhere along the line, you and your daughter have got to clear the air. If you can't do it directly with each other, I say find a counselor for very
brief. Oh, boy, does she not want to do that.
Really?
Really. What she wants to do is say, it's fine the way it is. None of my friends get along with their parents. Just, you know, the way it is fine, which means she's calling all the shots because of my granddaughter, and that's fine for her.
I know. It is kind of an amazing power that she has she has her daughter, and you want your granddaughter, huh?
Oh, do I?
Huh? You love your granddaughter?
Oh, yes.
What's your granddaughter's name?
Juliana.
Juliana. Is Juliana the single most adorable child in the universe?
Close to it.
Oh, it really touches your heart, right?
Yes.
And you couldn't stand the thought of being separated from Juliana by blackmail of your daughter.
That's what it is.
It is. I know. I understand.
Yeah, that's what is being done.
Yeah, no.
And the kid, of course, has no regard for me to equal mine for her. I mean, she's got a whole life. She doesn't care. She doesn't see me much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the difficulties about being a loving grandparent. It's so easy to blackmail you. You know, so it's like she's got you, you know?
Yeah.
She's got you by the earlobes.
She doesn't even want me either.
No, but, you know.
She just wants to minimize me and not feel too guilty.
Boy, I tell you, I know a counselor, one particular counselor who's an expert in helping somebody deal with these feelings.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I really do. If
you, and she would find fault with this person if she even has consented to go.
And no, but I mean, and maybe you alone.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Okay,
you,
now who is it?
Yeah, you call me and I'll get you a name. I know of a person.
I did call and I wasn't covered and I was thinking of switching my coverage, but...
It may be worth one or two conversations.
I could recognize the person's name if you said it.
Yeah, no, I can't say it on the air.
Can't say it. All right, then
I
will call.
So call my office. Feel free to call my office.
All right, thank you. I'll do that. Thanks
sure.
for everything.
Okay, Ann.
Right, bye-bye.
Ah, the blackmail of the grandparents and the grandparents. Thanks for calling in. You know, we touched on this, but we have to do this at one point. When a child finally gets the power of being able to control their parents using their children as the vehicle. I heard a story about a man today he has a son and is a young 2-year-old son, and his family's down in Florida. And his mother actually suggested to him that he get a divorce from his current wife and take their child and bring him down to live with her in Florida. She actually suggested it. She said, well, you know, that woman's no good for you or for the baby. You bring that child down here. We know how to bring it up. You and I will bring it up. Whoa. Okay, Mom. You know, well. 212-209-2900. You see, in my job, you don't even
Hello.
Need movies.
Hello?
Hi there. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. My name is Lisa. When you told a story earlier that kind of touched me, when my son was very young, my mom used to babysit. My mom was a former teacher with absolutely no patience at that point. And she used to tell him that there were bugs in her basement so that he wouldn't go downstairs, and just so he wouldn't go downstairs. Now he's 30, and he's extremely afraid of bugs still to this day. And I don't know what to tell him.
Yeah. It's very scary. It's not a matter of telling him. He's got an obsessive-compulsive disorder. And that obsessive-compulsive disorder comes out of something that happens in early childhood where love becomes attached to the fear of the bugs. It's almost like if he gives up the fear of the bugs, he loses love. And so this is a therapeutic intervention. There are two ways that work with this. The primary one that works with this is therapy, that's an active therapy that helps him work with imaging these bugs and going into the belly of the beast. You know, this is when we just go into the annihilation of the fear of indulging yourself. Because why live that way? But there's nothing you could tell him. You could tell him everything in the world. Bugs can't hurt you. Bugs are just bugs. Bugs are human. They have a right to live too. None of that. It is a disorder of the mind. It was crazy-making, and he got crazy. So he needs professional attention.
Thank you.
You know, either that or get a cat. Okay, let me take one more call. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air.
Nope.
All right, well, listen, my friends, this has been a very interesting exploration here, don't you think? A very, very interesting exploration. It's kind of painful. It's kind of difficult because when you think about it, we really just want to love each other, you know? And primarily, it's about love. Primarily, it's about trying to make each other sound with each other and loving of each other. But we do such weird, strange things. Hey, be sure to tune in tomorrow at 1 p.m., and we will continue with more interesting stuff. This is Armand DeMille. The website is thepositivemind.com. Vladimir Ashkenazi will play a little Chopin for you on the way out the door.